For those of you who don't know Dr. Morris Zipkowicz, let me just give you a little bit of a background. Morris graduated from the Canadian Memorial Chiropractic College in 1979. In 1983, he received his fellowship in acupuncture from the International Academy of Clinical Acupuncture. And at that time, he also was certified in auricular medicine through his studies with Paul Nogier and Dr. Corden. In 1985, he studied something called the causal chain principles from a doctors Kenyon, Lewis, and Schimmel, which he still uses extensively in his practice today. In 1993, he received his Diplomat of Homeopathy from the Homeopathic Medicine Association of Canada. He also completed his studies in homeopathy with homotoxicology, studying with Dr. Bianchi. He continued his postgraduate studies at the Hahnemann College for Heilkunst, which is in Ottawa, where he studied the works of many of the modern progressive homeopaths today. In the last 10 years, he's extensively traveled to Germany to become fully trained in the use of EAV and bioresonance technology, of which he holds regular training sessions. Now, the reason that we asked Dr. Zipkowicz to join us on the call this evening was I had the good opportunity to hear a lecture of his that he gave at a naturopathic conference in Las Vegas, Nevada. And in that conference, he specifically talked about something called biophysics as a possible explanation for how homeopathic remedies work. And I thought I was really fascinated because it was really the first time I'd heard a really clear scientific explanation of why these remedies, which we use in our practice and know work, it really a real scientific explanation of actually why they work and how they can work. And so I thought it would be invaluable to have somebody of Dr. Zipkowicz's intelligence and incredible clinical experience to come on and really share his experience and share this incredible work and research that he's been conducting over many, many decades. So again, Dr. Zipkowicz, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Kim. Quite the introduction.
Okay. So I guess I thought I'd just start by asking you if you could give us a little bit of a background, a little bit of a history of your involvement in energy medicine.
This has been part of my, I guess, my whole, timeline of getting into alternative medicine. So when I became a homeopath 18 years ago, as you know me very well, Kim, I'm the kind of guy who really needs to know exactly how things work before I actually start using them in practice, especially on patients. And I spent a lot of time after my homeopathic degree studying other people like Royal Rife and Enderlein, Wilhelm Reich, Steiner. These are all people who had a small piece of the puzzle that made more sense to me as far as how we really get disease and what possibilities are there to actually address these issues. And I do have a bit of a physics background from university, and because of that, the biochemical model never really suited me. By the biochemical model, I mean the way some people practice today, which is strictly, a nootrogenic or a regimen approach, which is strictly the use of vitamins and minerals, because I thought there was something deeper that could have really been done with people who are basically sick. And this is what really appealed to me about homeopathy, because it really deals at what's called the biophysical level. Okay, we're dealing with the actual study of physics when we look at homeopathy. And I know many homeopaths ask me these days, they get confronted with people who say there's no scientific evidence of homeopathy and how it works. Well, I think I can give you some pretty good journals and pretty good books for your website, Kim, that actually can quiet any critic out there. Because they are quite fascinated work by many biophysicists, which I've actually had the honor of meeting in the last number of years, primarily in Europe and Germany, especially. And with homeopathy, the one premise that the higher the dilution, the more powerful it is. There is a basic physics law that says the energy of the electromagnetic wave equals Planck's constant times the frequency. And we know that the higher the frequency, the higher the dilution we're dealing with. So from a very basic physics law, we know that the higher the dilution, that we have, that we work with, the more energy we're actually working with. And this is the part that I've been working with in the idea we're going to be talking about today, of trying to capture this energy in a different way than homeopaths use nowadays, for reasons we'll talk about shortly.
Just for the benefit of everyone on the call, Morris, could you just define biophysics relative to biochemistry? Because some people may not be familiar with that terminology.
Yeah, I should do that, Kim, because many biochemists don't understand biophysics either. The biophysicists aren't the actual new boys on the block right now. They are actually biologists and they are actually physicists. So they're studying the biological systems strictly from the perspective of the physical realm. Okay, so they are biophysicists. Now, biochemists are basically stuck in the realm of molecules, and that's basically as deep as they go. Okay, they both disciplines understand the word molecular signal, but biophysicists describe these frequencies as an essential physical characteristic of matter, whereas biologists and biochemists do not consider that electromagnetic waves can actually play a role in any molecular function at all. So that's a big division between those two. And actually, there's a lot of wonderful research in the biophysical field, but unfortunately, it's not in the right hands of people who really should be looking at these perspectives.
Morris, we posted an article recently up on the Whole Health Now website about what's called digital homeopathy.
Right.
And I don't know if I'd like to refer people to that for people who have not yet had a chance to look at that article. It's up on the Whole Health Now website, and if you go to What's New, you'll see it's one of the top articles there. I thought it might be useful if you could kind of give the listeners an idea of the history of what digital homeopathy is. Maybe you could even explain what it is and then kind of give a history of it.
Of course. As far as I know from all the reading, it started back with a researcher called Jacques Benveniste. He's a French researcher, and some of you may be aware of his famous research he did, which he published in 1995 in the journal Nature, where he actually used a drug, ranitidine, to prevent histamine release in granulocytes. And he did one step further. He actually took dilutions of ranitidine up to 10x and found that they actually had the same effect on the granulocytes. So he was quite excited about the outcome, and when he published the paper in the journal itself, that's when his career went downhill, because this was not supposed to happen. Basically what it said, that you can actually take dilutions of many pharmaceutical drugs and have a similar effect on the body without the harmful effects of accumulation of the harmful chemicals. So of course that particular research was redone in a way that would cause it to fail. But Benveniste went on, because he basically knew that he was right, and many research can actually prove what he did. And he went on to actually, very simply, using a computer, and what he basically did, he brought a microphone close to a substance or a remedy, homeopathic remedy, and he basically cranked up the volume. So you can actually listen to a remedy, you can listen to a substance, because they all do vibrate, they all do emit a particular vibration. And we have a lot of technology nowadays that can take that analog signal and digitize it and store it and then replay it again. So his career went on to the point where he actually used captured signals of, in many cases, some very dangerous chemicals. And he offered these to certain companies that said, if I can give you a sound that will do the same thing as the actual chemical will do in a compound, would they be interested? I said, of course we would be. And basically they found that exactly that the chemical reaction would still be triggered by the actual sound or the song of the actual chemical that was not introduced into the solution. Because many biochemists know that a molecule itself in the presence of its receptor will do the same thing that Benveniste did. It basically will emit frequencies in which the receptor will be capable of recognizing. So here he just took out the molecule itself and he substituted the actual signal that normally would be emitted by that molecule. So if you look at that one premise, there's a whole world open up as far as homeopathic research goes. Because this is exactly what we're doing when we deal with homeopathic remedies, which are fascinating to me. When you take a remedy sublingually, you're actually transmitting, very much like a radio transmitter does. And somewhere in your body, the signal is being picked up. And the reaction is basically being basically triggered by that signal.
Very interesting. Morris, could you tell us a little bit more about the research that's going on that, that validates this type of technology in the area of biophysics? This is very interesting, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Benvenisto was the first researcher to carry on this work. And then there was another researcher called P.C. Endler. And he did basically study the development of tadpoles and their development into tree frogs. And they knew well that thyroxin, which are diluted up to about an 8x, would actually accelerate their development from larvae to tadpoles. But they also found that thyroxin in higher dilutions would actually inhibit it. So this was one experiment that he did. And he could reproduce that over and over, and many other people could reproduce it too. But he did one thing that was even more fascinating. He took that sample of the thyroxin in both dilutions to inhibit and to also accelerate it. But he basically put an electromagnetic coil around it, which is like a big microphone, and he record that and then play the same signal into the actual pond or into the container where the larvae were. And he found that the actual same thing would happen as if the actual homeopathic solution was in the actual water itself. So basically, he proved that the actual remedy does have electromagnetic properties. You know, some people think that homeopathic potencies are just molecules in water, but they're more than that. They're actually electromagnetic field vehicles with specific frequency complexes. And because of that, we can actually capture these, digitize them, and re-emit them, and trigger the same response as if a homeopathic remedy would, but also as a regular another tincture or a regular substance can do as well.
Morris, is this being used in the world today, and can you give us an idea of where it's being used and in what circumstances?
Yes, it is. My first exposure to it was, I guess it must be about 8 years ago, when I was in Germany at the annual Medicine Week in Baden-Baden. And I was walking by the booth for Stauffen Farm, which many of you may know is one of the oldest homeopathic companies in the world right now. And they were selling a little CD with remedies. And when I got talking to them, I said, this is an interesting way of giving people the remedies. I said, well, we were forced into it. And the story there is that the German government, I guess, walked into their institution, especially into their vault, and saw many remedies which were not cataloged, I guess, well enough for them, and they were told to destroy many of the remedies. Some were 100 years old, 200 years old. So, of course, you know, I'm sure it hurt them very much to actually destroy these, so they, after Benavista's work, they said, well, maybe we can digitize these. And they went ahead, proceeded, and went through this procedure and captured all these remedies in a specific electromagnetic spectrum, and digitized them and put them on a CD, and we're selling them with a simple bioresonance device, which is just an amplifier of that digital information, which can be easily imprinted onto water. So in reality, you can recreate the same remedy which is digitized over and over again. And after that, other companies followed the same procedure. Especially, and there's actually a court challenge, which is very interesting, I found, that the government actually said, well, you can't do that. You cannot sell analog signals of the remedies. So I believe the lawyers for the company said, well, if we can't do that, then you can also not sell the music from the ages, basically Beethoven, Bach, Mozart, because these are music that were created for the masses to heal the masses.
Mm.
And this is what we're doing here, too.
Mm. That's very interesting. I like that analogy.
So it's a very good analogy.
Yeah.
And because of that analogy, they actually won in court.
Hmm.
So at any point they want to basically wipe out the actual digital homeopathic remedies, they have to also prevent people from selling the old masters. And
no more Beethoven or Mozart, huh?
This is going to happen.
Very interesting. I know more. Many of the, most of the people on this call are probably going to be more, classically oriented homeopaths or
yes.
traditional or Hahnemannian. I know some people might even be a little bit, skeptical of the idea of taking, our wonderful homeopathic remedies that we get in these little white pills and then converting them into some type of digital format and then, imprinting that format into a water medium. Could you kind of give us a sense of what is actually happening here? I mean, is the whole remedy going in there? Is it exactly the same as a remedy? Is it different? What's actually being captured in this process?
This was my concern a number of years ago too. I mean, these products were being sold, and interesting enough, people were responding to these digital remedies almost as well as the original remedy itself.
Mm-hmm.
So of course, I looked into the whole procedure, and it really fascinated me. And they actually did just that. They would actually take the remedy, put it in a chamber that was basically sealed off from the environment, and surrounded by different electromagnetic coils that are basically receptors and pick up all the different types of emissions from that particular remedy, and go through a little bit of a preamp, which would boost up the signal, and it would basically go into a simple computer, which has a sound card, which has a limit between 20 hertz and 20,000 hertz, which all computers do nowadays. So he would actually be able to digitize. Digitize means you take that analog wave, which is like a simple sine wave, you chop it up and you create digital signals from it. And then you can easily reconvert it back to an analog form. And when he basically did that, we found we're able to reproduce, and to this day I would say it wouldn't be 100%, but it's very close, because people are still responding. And Benvenista found that using the ear, which also has the same, what I call a biological window of 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz, we're able to transmit information in through the ear, and which basically transmitted throughout the whole body. So this fascinated me, because over the years I've actually had patients that have taken remedies, just listen to remedies. And I know the biggest challenge for many classical homeopaths is especially when you do radar, you have a choice of four or five synonyms which are very close, and you say, well, which one do I give? And I've been confronted with that many times too. In many cases, what I've had to do is just play the remedy and let them listen to it. And in almost every case, they would react to one of the remedies, which I know they would need. So it's a way of verifying. There's a co-resonance in place here that coexists. Because we know from one thing that the homeopathic remedy really is a picture of an artificial disease, and then as a homeopath you try and match it up with a natural disease in the body. Well, if we have that same picture in electromagnetic form, it makes sense we do the same thing and match it up with a natural disease within our body.
Morrison, in your own practice, are you exclusively using these digital remedies, or do you also give regular remedies as well?
No, I use regular remedies as well, too. Our goal is to eventually have every remedy that's in radar be digitized in all the different potencies. That's a big undertaking, and I'm sure we've set our goal within the next half year at least to have it all done. And this will give people flexibility, because I look around the world. I've been to Germany and France, and I look at what's going on there. Last year in Germany, all the nosodes are basically being prohibited from being used. A lot of the potencies are being lowered down to about 30 C and lower. Same thing in France. So the real heritage of homeopathy is being threatened, as I can see, globally. And this is a way to actually recapture that and actually give the practitioners an avenue to use these remedies, which we can no longer get. I know in Canada here in particular, a lot of our remedies from Helios have been cut off. A lot of the ones from the States have been cut off. They can still come to Canada, but the company has to pay roughly about $50,000 for every remedy just to get what's called a VIN number. and with a number of remedies, that can be very pricey.
But very interesting. You know, Morris, I was in Korea last year, and in Korea, it's actually illegal to give homeopathic remedies, and there's actually a community of people there who are interested in homeopathy and who are looking for a way to give remedies legally, and I think this might be something that of real value.
Very much so.
Yeah.
I mean, Benvenista, if you look at potential uses for it, he actually was able to capture all the different organisms, microorganisms. So when you scan food, you can actually separate what's in the food, the normal food, from what can potentially be contaminating the food, which include all the food additives, stimulants, fertilizer, so you get a rough idea of how much is actually part of that food which you think is organic. In the pharmaceutical industry, what better way to experiment with new drugs than to experiment with it digitally? You're not dealing with the after effects, which are so-called side effects of a medication, which is a counteraction to any drug. You're just dealing with the actual frequency of the radiation, the initial action. And because of Benvenista's work, there should be no reason why the actual electromagnetic signal of the different anticoagulants, the beta blockers, the nicotine patch cannot be also relayed to people and they have the same reaction, as was an experiment that Benvenista did. In the homeopathic field, it's, I look at this, we can use some very potentially dangerous substances and actually prove them just by listening to them without having any danger of any severe poisonings. So, it's unlimited as far as the possibilities go.
So, Morris, what do you notice when you give, like, let's say you give a patient, a dose of calcarea carbonica from a regular homeopathic pharmacy versus the digitalized? Do you notice any difference in the way the remedies work? Or
the one thing we have noticed, and I've been working with the German people on this, when you reconvert the digital signal back into analog and into water, the difference is the potency only lasts for maybe 2 or 3 months and then loses its strength. Whereas the homeopathic remedy made the traditional way with a succussion and dilutions over and over again can last indefinitely. So that's really the only difference.
But in terms of the reactions of the patients, it seems to be pretty comparable.
Pretty comparable, yes.
Interesting.
So basically, if you make a co-resonant connection with a signal from the remedy and the natural disease in the body, there is a reaction that is triggered.
Interesting.
And I did this actually, I think, 3 weeks ago at a course. I think Don Marie was there. We had a woman there who changed her stature every time I played a remedy. When I played her constitutional remedy, sulfur, she was basically lying in her seat, sloughed over, ready to fall asleep. I just played sulfur over the speakers on my laptop, and the whole class just saw her sit right up and perk right up, and all of a sudden her eyes became clear just from pain, just by playing her constitutional remedy.
Morris, I know that you have a background in classical homeopathy. You've studied the remedies, and you've read the Organon, and you know all this stuff. And I'm curious, why you moved into this direction and what you think this approach holds as a modality for the future.
I've looked at some of the challenges that homeopaths have had, and I know I've spoken to many, and many have said that in some cases the remedies do not work as well as they should, even the well-selected remedies. And when I study with the Germans, they have some good insight as to why potentially it doesn't work. And one of those obvious ones is we take one of these remedies sublingually, and when you look at some people's mouths, and they've got a dozen amalgams in their mouth, that's a very strong electric circuit that's basically buzzing back and forth in their mouth. There's a very strong magnetic field there, strong enough to neutralize any remedy before it can even activate anything in their body. Okay, so you have to look for other ways to deliver that particular remedy to the person. Through the ear can be another possibility, and the skin also as a receptor can also pick it up as well. And there's also things like strong focal activities, root canal teeth. They also found to be very detrimental to homeopathic remedies. And the biggest research I saw, which makes a lot more sense, is if you look at the work of Stuart Pissinger, who did extensive work in histology on what's called the matrix or the mesenchyme, or the connective tissue, the part that keeps all the cells in the body together, all the cements them together. And this is your regulation organ. It keeps you healthy. It keeps you regulated. It makes corrections on a regular basis to keep us in what's called homeostasis. It's also, unfortunately, the common dumping ground for many chemicals. When the liver gets overloaded and cannot deal with the stress, this is the area that it dumps into. And unfortunately, this is an area that needs to be cleaned to be regulated. And this is also the media which many homeopathic remedies can get transmitted through to reach their target site. And there's one person that I had the pleasure of, listening to last October. It was a biophysicist named Fritz Albert Popp. And he studied the phenomenon of how information is transmitted within living systems. And his work revolved around what are called biophotons. And he found that the actual DNA in every cell in our body actually emits these biophotons of all different frequencies, all different wavelengths and amplitudes, and they all have a particular target. So if information is being transmitted to parts of our body, and it's really a blueprint. It's basically, it's our field around us that actually constructs it, but the blueprint lies in the DNA. And he will actually study these biophotonic emissions from the actual cells. And to do that, he actually developed a piece of equipment called a photon multiplier, which has the capacity to pick up the glow of a firefly 10 miles away. So this type of equipment can really study people both in the natural healthy state and also in the ill state. And what differences are there? So it's a perfect laboratory to study disease at the biophysical level. And he actually, his laboratory is in an old military base in Germany, and you go down this bunker fairly deep, you know, he calls it the darkest place on Earth, which is a perfect setting for his laboratory. And he came up with many fascinating findings, especially with different conditions which he was looking at with people's health. But the one thing he found that was very important was the actual coherence. I mean, it's a purity. If you think about a laser, like a laser light, okay, that's coherent. But the coherence that our DNA emits is so coherent, it's better than anything that we can make as man. And when the target is reached, it gives an information of how a liver cell should regenerate or how a kidney cell should regenerate. But the problem he found was between the emitter, which is the DNA, and the receptor, which can be any target site, if there's any way, if there's that particular media is basically gooped up with any kind of a chemical or toxicity, it actually has the ability to absorb the emission and then re-emit it at a different frequency. And he discovered this by working with different carcinogens. And the worst one known to man is one called benzoylpyrene, which can give you cancer just by touching it. And he found that this was by far the biggest frequency scramble occurred with this particular chemical. And what was interesting, I did a presentation here in Toronto a little while ago, and it just coincidentally, 2 or 3 days, there's a newspaper article saying that stem cell research doesn't work. They found that stem cells are actually creating cancer. They're the engine driving the cancer growth. Well, if you look at Pop's work, you can understand why. Because the signal from the DNA, when it reaches target site where you would put the stem cell, if it receives a scrambled cell, it would de-differentiate into something that was not originally meant to differentiate into. So it comes back to the original premise that Beauchamp talked about 100 years ago as a terrain. And a healthy terrain is what we really should try to accomplish. It's also the media where a lot of our homeopathic remedies can also need to be transferred through or need to be transmitted through. So this is a challenge I found. So I was looking for different means to basically transmit these remedies to patients that work working in another way. And I found in many cases that people do have a lot of dental issues. The remedies weren't working as well as if they listened to them.
very interesting. Now, Morris, I know that you're involved with a group called Synergy, or the Brit team, I guess, and you've put together a whole kind of package of different things that work together. And I know you've got certain devices that you use for feedback purposes that integrate with this whole process. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. Again, as a classical homeopath, I mean, the more skilled he is, the better he can choose the remedy or the simulum that the patient needs. But in many cases, it's a real challenge to say, well, which ones? I'll try this one now. I'll try this one now. I'll try this one next week, next time. And it becomes a challenge, and the patients still suffer. But there are feedback devices out there which can possibly cut that time down and maybe can give you shortcuts, in a sense that if you look at Reinhold's Vohl's work, he used a simple ohmmeter to measure different reflex points in the body and look at their reaction under a little bit of stress. And if you put a homeopathic remedy in a circuit, you can actually see changes in the reading, beneficial or detrimental. Okay, so this can be a way to determine whether a remedy is beneficial or not, or neutral, or can be harmful. A lot of people can do muscle testing. A lot of people can use the Noger's pulse. From you, it's going to get a yes-no answer. But the one I'm really interested in recently is a technique called heart rate variability, where they measure not the heart rate, but the difference between your heart rate, which is really a reflection of your whole autonomic nervous system. What state are you predominantly in? Sympathetic, parasympathetic? I mean, most of us are in a sympathetic state just from the stress of day-to-day activities. And unfortunately, many of us can't come back down to a parasympathetic state to relax and to actually heal at night. So we're looking at a device right now. It's a real-time HRV. So in reality, a patient can hold the remedy or listen to it and see the effect it has on their nervous system. They can actually give more of a beneficial reading. So we're exploring different avenues or different techniques and give practitioners a feedback during that session to take the guesswork out of homeopathy.
Yeah, I got to ask you this, Morris, because I know that there's different types of you know, feedback devices available on the market, and I don't remember who I spoke to, but I was under the impression that it was at least some of this equipment, you know, you test somebody, and then an hour later you test them again, and you get different types of results. And
that's not the equipment we're looking at, though.
Okay. Could you tell us about how that's different? Or?
Yeah. The equipment you're probably referring to out there, there are devices out there where you put your hand on a electrode or the strap, electrodes around your head,
right,
your ankles,
right.
Your feet.
Right.
They do a scan of your whole body and they tell you what's wrong with you. Mm. Well, between you and me, Kim, I've not found one out there anywhere in Germany or in North America that can give me reproducible results, consistent results. And I have tested these. In my office here, I've taken them apart. I've basically put them to the ringer, to the acid test. And so far, there's not one out there that can actually scan you to tell you what's wrong with you. The EAV is still, for me, one of the basics, because I can get reproducible measurements. Unless I actually do something to the patient to change their reading, it will not change. Mm. Especially when it comes to serious conditions like focal activity, which is that disturbance field in the body, most of which are in the mouth area. You know, the Germans say that 80% of our illnesses are due to modern dentistry. They're in many cases not far off. And when the avenue for taking homeopathic remedies is the mouth itself, that can be a challenge to taking many remedies nowadays. So what fascinated me is to find a different avenue to expose people to the remedies which they need.
Morris, I know your group uses radar software. I know because I know you have a lot of students, and you refer a lot of the students to us, and they end up buying radar. And so I'm curious, how do you integrate using radar into this whole process?
Well, again, radar to me is a real time-saving tool. I can sit and listen to the patient, go through history. It gives me time to dig deeper and deeper with the questioning period. And when you're finished, you've got your 20 rubrics in front of you. You've got a selection of 20, 30, 40, 50 remedies. again, the challenge there begins, which of these remedies does the patient need? Of course, you would think it's the number one remedy, the one they need. Well, in many cases, it isn't. And in many cases, the patients themselves have not been very expressive as far as their, what's called the language of suffering. So again, you are challenged to say, which remedy do they really need? So what we've been doing with yourself, with Scott Flowers, is trying to integrate a database of remedies that people can have available to them to test any way they have, any kind of feedback device they have, even if simply just listening to the remedies for the with the patient would be enough to verify and qualify which remedy they need. So I think right now it's in place where you can actually, the top 10 remedies can actually be organized for you to use in any manner you choose.
Now, I'm sorry, did you want to say something else?
Yeah, in a way, it's like having a virtual pharmacy at your disposal. Hmm. So you have your assessment protocols, and then you have your virtual pharmacy waiting to test which remedy, which combination of remedies you look at.
Very interesting. Morse, what about proving remedies in this way, just by having people listen to the... Is that possible? Is anybody doing work like that, or what's the story about
Very
that?
Much so. The Germans are actually doing that already.
Mm-hmm.
And Benveniste started that with his interest, and so did Fritz Albert Popp.
Hmm.
He actually would say, it's interesting, Popp did research on homeopathic remedies as well. And his description as it was very typical of a, it's called a biophysicist and his perception of homeopathy. But he called homeopathic remedies photon suckers. And by that he means, it's just like a tuning fork in resonance, a suitable remedy will attract and then absorb any non-physiological oscillations which should not be there. In other words, as we go through life, the diseases are imprinted on there through a process called frequency modulation. That original coherent beam that we talked about coming out of DNA, it loses its coherentness with the addition of these particular diseases that we take on as we go through life. So what Pop was saying, if there's a resonance of an external signal that matches the internal signal, there is a process that can actually absorb these non-physiological oscillations which should not be there. And in reality, this is how homeopathy works. And by doing this, you reestablish that coherence again. And you reestablish coherence, you reestablish communication. And all of a sudden, the signal from the DNA, when it reaches the target site, it will be a nice, clean, crisp signal, and the actual organ or system can regenerate in a healthy way, whereas before it couldn't. So you're almost removing these hindrances to the body to regenerate itself back to a healthy state.
Very interesting. So they're actually doing provings right now in Europe?
Yes. And by doing provings, if you take some dangerous chemicals right now, it could be anything, it could be even some radioactive substances. Instead of exposing yourself to something potentially dangerous, you can actually listen to these remedies and you can actually put it on an MP3 file or an MP3 player, listen to it and walk around with it and just jot down your reactions here and your all your different sensitivities and the modalities.
Are the provings being done in a more formal way? Like, I mean, are they doing double-blind, mass placebo set provings? Or how are the provings being conducted? I'm just curious.
They're not doing that. They're taking the... As far as I know, they've taken a number of people. I think their base number was 100 people. And this is more Stoffel Farm.
Hmm.
What they're doing is they're basically giving these people, it's almost like little CD players of the remedies. And they would walk around for a number of days, and they would all bring their data back in at the same time and compare the symptoms they would actually all experience during a period of 2 or 3 weeks.
Hmm.
So the common symptoms would basically be conclusive enough to them that if you prove this remedy, these are the type of symptoms you would get.
Interesting. Morse, where could we find out more information about the provings that have been done? Do you know which remedies have been...
I think we went to Stoffel Farm. I believe they still have a website left there.
Would you
know... I don't think the Germans have shut them down yet.
Okay. Could you spell that for everybody's benefit? Just
okay. Stoffel Farm. It's Stauffen Farm. Not F, but it's a Pharm.
So stuff. So if we go to Google and we type that in, we can probably access that information.
Yes, you should, yes.
Okay, great.
But they are the oldest, as far as I know, homeopathic company in the world right now.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So what do you see the potential use of these remedies then? How would you see them being used in the future?
In the future?
Yeah.
Well, again, it gives, to get into the modern age, it gives practitioners the ability to do distance assessments through anamnesis, but whatever remedies they determine the patient needs, they can actually transmit these signals over the Internet and say, listen to these remedies, instead of email, basically, or not email, but instead of mailing the remedies to them, which is a big challenge nowadays because, you know, they get x-rayed very strongly when they cross the border or even through a lot of courier services.
Sure.
So it makes a lot more sense to email these remedies and people can just listen to them.
Hmm.
There's another application we're looking at right now. In the last number of years, the practice of homeopuncture has been prohibited, okay, because they feel by dipping a needle into a homeopathic remedy, you're going to make it less sterile. Well, a lot of acupuncturists will attach an electric current to their needles to stimulate the needle. Well, we could do the same thing, attach a needle, but this, instead of a current, we're going to actually transmit a remedy through it. The same as if they were to dip that needle into a remedy, into a tincture of a homeopathic remedy. So again, your imagination can run wild here of the potential applications of this.
You actually sometimes give these remedies, like when people listen to music, the remedy is embedded in the music, is that correct?
Yes, yes. When you listen to the remedies, there is a sound, and that's basically the noise of the environment. And we're actually working on a process to minimize that noise and get as clear a signal as we possibly can. But within that noise is the actual sound of the remedy, and the body will still separate the noise from the actual remedy and react to it, which means you can take that remedy and actually can modulate it onto music as well in the background, because the body still has many receptor sites that can pick up these electromagnetic emissions. Again, through the skin, through the ear, through the eye. We have receptor sites all over our body.
So have you found that any genre of music will antidote, like, you know, heavy metal or...
It would be interesting to put some remedies into the heavy metal music to see if we can antidote the effects of it.
I mean, I have to ask, because, you know, like Mozart and Beethoven and Haydn and Schubert, you know, that's one type of music, and then, you know, you've got the soul type music, which is, you know, not quite the same type of thing.
Well, there's been a lot of work done on the actual, the mind slips me, but I think it's Emoto, actually crystallized water.
Oh, yeah.
Exposed to different types of musics, and the variety of crystallization was just incredible compared to what type of music it listened to.
I've seen that. That's amazing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Amazing, those different structures, yeah.
Again, water is just a media. It's a solvent that holds information. And if you look at water, too, we are primarily water. Our bodies are primarily water. And what Benvenista found that by, even with that window of 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz, those are low frequencies. And very much like a submarine communicates with another submarine, they use low frequencies because water can transmit a low frequency very easily. It almost amplifies the signal. Whereas the higher frequencies in the microwave range will not pass through water. So by transmitting that remedy through the ear, it can be transmitted throughout the whole body just through the actual water molecules, which can carry that information.
Morris, I know you work with some pretty seriously sick individuals. You know, I know you work with cancer patients and things like that. Can you tell us a little bit about what type of results you're seeing using this approach?
Yes, with as when we first met Kim, I was doing a fair amount of research in the Rife field. Royal Raymond Rife. His work revolves around finding resonant frequencies which can destroy pathogens. And that initially attracted me, but when you start to believe in the pleomorphic principle, those pathogens were there not because they invaded the body, but because we created them. So it made more sense to me to go after the train that created the pathogens. And that cancer patient, this is really much the case. So instead of transmitting frequencies that address the pathogens, I started working with the actual signal, digitized signals of the remedy, and what happens if I transmit those remedies through the Rife? Because the Rife basically can take any modulated signal on it, carry it to the patient, demodulate it, and transmit that signal throughout the whole body. And right from the very first person, we did have some very immediate reactions that normally I would have to wait maybe a day or two, but they would happen within 4 or 5 minutes. So it's a way for me to accelerate somebody's case management instead of waiting for things to happen. You know, unfortunately, myself or people like myself get people who come to me and say, we've got 4 months to live, what can you do? Now, if we did classical homeopathy, we don't have enough time. Unless you really luck out and find the right signalum and things do start to happen, you can buy yourself some time. But things like cancer are a very complex disease, which you all know, and there's so many different parameters that need to be addressed.
Sure, sure.
And at least if we can look at these parameters in a digital form, we can quickly test these people for what is there and take action very quickly, too.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying basically is what you've really gained from this is time.
Yeah.
That's the primary thing.
It's time, it's convenience. Mm. It's a never-ending pharmacy. Basically what Scott and I are going to do is try to get every drug out there on the market, get it digitized, and also get the dilutions of it so practitioners can actually have this at their disposal, because nowadays, in many cases, you see people coming for the first time, you have to deal with many iatrogenic diseases before you can actually start working with the people.
Mm.
Okay, again, as Popwood said, if you can actually get the electromagnetic information of the actual drug itself and have a photon sucking effect, it can actually remove that imprint on the body of the medication they've been on, be it chemotherapy or painkillers or whatever drug they're on. And they'll actually clean up the train and make any homeopathic remedy work a lot better, too.
Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
Go ahead.
No, were you going to say something? I'm sorry.
Take a deep breath.
Okay, so I see we're kind of running short on time. I actually had a lot of other questions that I wanted to ask you, but I want to give other people an opportunity to ask some questions as well. Mm-hmm. I did want to mention to people who are on the call and listening to the recording at a later time that if you go to the Whole Health Now website, wholehealthnow.com, and you look in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little button that says What's New. And if you click on that, it'll take you to all the new, most recent articles that have been posted onto the Whole Health Now website. And I think if you just look a couple of, two or three down, you'll see that there's this article on digital homeopathy that is quite interesting. So I recommend that everybody check that article out. It gives you more information and background on this very interesting subject. Also wanted to mention that we will be conducting another one of these interviews with Morris on Monday, April 9th at 5 p.m. Pacific. And we don't have the contact information right now, but you can check our website. We will also be sending out an email to notify people about that call as well. And we're going to be using a little bit of a different format. We're going to be using something called GoToMeeting, which allows us to actually have a telephone interview and simultaneously allow people to see what is on our computer screens. And I think this will be quite interesting because we'll actually be able to provide some visuals that will really clarify some of the principles that are being shared here this evening. So again, that's Monday, April 9th at 5 p.m. Pacific, and you should receive an email. You can also check the calendar section of the Whole Health Now website. If you don't get emails from us, you can go to wholehealthnow.com/signup, and you can then just put in your email address, and you'll be able to be notified of these teleconference calls. Morris, is there anything that you'd like to share before we open it up to the audience relative to just general information, how they can...
I guess to sum up what I've been talking about for the last, 45 minutes here,
yeah,
is when I really tried to put forth all the different research, the conclusion of all the research is this one sentence, which I'd just like to read. It says, all biochemical reactions in living organisms are operated and regulated by low electromagnetic frequencies. And to me, this is a definition of homeopathy.
Mm. Very interesting.
Okay. So, in other words, the homeopathic remedies are what control the biochemical world.
Mm.
That we're trying so desperately to rebalance and to manipulate.
Sure.
And we're losing that battle.
Well, that makes a lot of sense to me, and I think this is just fascinating research, and I really want to thank you for bringing it to our attention. I know for me personally, I keep thinking about that aphorism in the Organon where Hahnemann says, it doesn't matter how homeopathy works, and then he proceeds to kind of give you this kind of definition that's kind of really crazy. You know, it doesn't make a lot of sense. It's really nice to have a kind of more grounded scientific backing for this whole thing. So, and I think it's a tremendous asset for homeopaths in the future, regardless whether you practice classical homeopathy or utilize a digitalized approach that you are. I mean, to know that there is some type of real evidence for why these remedies work, I think it's invaluable for everybody in our community. So I want to thank you personally for that. And I will go ahead and open up the lines and let some other people ask some questions as well. So, hi, everybody.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, hello.
Great. Does anybody have any questions for Dr. Zipkowicz?
Yeah, I do. I would like to know if it's the incorrect remedy, does the pulse go up?
Sorry, if the...
Can you repeat the question again, please?
Okay, he said that you could check the remedy by the pulse of the person.
Mm-hmm.
If the person's holding the remedy and it's the incorrect remedy, does the pulse go up?
No.
Increase?
The work of Paul Noget, he did a lot of work on what's called auricular medicine. When you measure the pulse with your thumb and the correct remedy is in the presence of the person, the pulse actually goes up in amplitude. If it's the incorrect remedy, it can actually do you more harm. The pulse will actually decrease in amplitude. Okay, again, this is one biofeedback technique people can use.
Great. Other questions?
Yeah, I have a question.
Go ahead.
Has anybody actually done a proving from a well-proven remedy in a digital form to see if, you know, if the proving is the same?
I believe Jacques Benveniste did that just to prove that what he has is as accurate as the original substance. And, again, he was a researcher, and he basically said that when molecules meet at the receptor site, where they're supposed to be, they actually emit a signal to that receptor site to trigger a response. So all he did is remove that molecule out of the formula and just transmit that same signal, and you'll get the same type of response. So it makes sense that we can bypass the actual physical molecule itself and just transmit the electromagnetic frequencies to that to the target site.
And when they did it, when he did the proving of the substance of the same remedy, the symptoms were pretty much identical.
Yes, they were.
They were. Interesting.
Yes.
Other questions?
Yes. I would like to say that perhaps this method would be much, much better because we know the pharmacopoeia not long ago of here in the United States, it was not a 30 or a 200 or 1 emet was not the same frequency as it usually should have been. If somebody remembers the old homeopathic situation, and with these frequencies, that could be eliminated, that when you want to give a 30, that will be a 30 or a 200 or a 1M or whatever. Is that correct?
Yeah, again, with the higher frequencies, if you look at the basic audio science, there are things called harmonics. If you use your computer, you're limited to 20,000 hertz. Now, what we're doing, we're capturing remedies at a much higher frequency with sound cards, which go much higher, and potentially we're going to look at the megahertz range. Now, there's a thing called a beat frequency, that a high frequency can still have the same effect through a smaller frequency range. Because if you listen to a particular tone, you have the harmonics, which can cause and basically trigger the same response at a lower frequency range, but it's a harmonic. It's like an octave. It keeps going higher and higher and higher. But the higher octave you may need, but the lower octave will also trigger the same response. So if you work strictly through a computer sound card to play these remedies, you're going to have the information of the higher frequencies there as well. Just like in the audio industry, we're now getting amplifiers which go way beyond the 20,000 hertz range, because that's really all our ears can hear. but the when a person listens to a classical piece that has been actually digitized at a much higher frequency range, it's a, like a much better experience than just within the 20K range. And this is the same thing as the remedies that we are actually going to capture. It's going to be more of a complete remedy. It's just like capturing a piece played by an orchestra rather than one particular instrument being played in that same piece. You can still get a trigger, but not as good as the whole orchestra playing the actual piece. Answer the question.
I think we have time for one more question.
So. Okay, I have a question.
Go ahead.
I actually have several. I want to make sure too before I ask. As far as being available for answering the rest of them, do you have a website or email that's available to send questions to?
Yeah. Go to what's it, Scott? TheBritTeam.com.
Say that one more time.
Scott.
I didn't hear that quite.
Scott,
S-C-O-T-T? Yes, it's the Brit Team, TheBritTeam.
Okay, great.
And also,
I'm sitting
remember,
in your Dietrich.
We have another call on Monday.
What's that?
Go ahead. Did you have a question?
Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I was sitting under Dietrich Klinghart, and a lot of this, he talks about pop and biophotons and
right.
And also the treatments through the ear with the tomatius, or not sure exactly how to say that. And a lot of it's kind of making sense now, because attending that as a homeopath versus the homotoxicology or the other practitioners there, it's coming together, so I'm very excited to hear what you have to say and offer. I was wondering in the future, this is kind of out there, but do you see the means of capturing a patient's frequency while you're taking the case and then having the ability to match the frequency with the remedies?
Yes,
do you see a future of that?
Yes, we do. This is something that actually has been discussed. Just like Benvenista would take a sample of a food from, let's say, from the supermarket, and he basically capture that electromagnetic emission of the whole fruit. And when we do have captured signals of, let's say, of different viruses and different fungi, we can actually look at the original signal and see what is in that actual orange that shouldn't be there. Now, there's no reason why we can't do that with a human being, is take the complete information of a human being and look at it and basically pick apart what should be there, what should not be there. And we already have can build a database of the different types of pathogens or chemicals or drugs or even emotional traumas at higher at the higher frequency range which should not be there. And these can be addressed with specific remedies which are co-resonance with that particular disturbance. And as Pop said, they would basically absorb that particular energy and that would reestablish the coherence we need for proper regeneration.
Very interesting. So, are you done? Do you have something else to say?
Is there one more question? I think she has two questions.
Well, we'll do one more question.
30C equals like a half hour listening. Do you have a remedy chart with potency kind of so that if a patient listens to, say a patient needs like a potency of a 30C and not a 1M, would they listen to that remedy longer or in more intervals, or how do you treat with the listening versus just how a remedy is taken?
Okay, there's another principle I haven't talked about. There's many principles, but one important one was research done by William Ross Addy. And he said it's the correct frequency that you need, which operates through what's called a biological window, and these are different windows that access different parts of our body. If the correct frequency is basically transmitted to our bodies, there is an instantaneous connection, co-resonant connection. But a frequency which your body does not need, which can be harmful, you'd have to be exposed to that frequency for a much longer period of time for it to have an effect on our body. That's what I'm saying. In many cases, if you're sitting here, I'm sitting here, and you know, the first three or four remedies in radar look awfully close, and you know, which one does this patient need? Well, I would just simply play one after the other and just wait for a response from the patient. In many cases, they feel it deep inside in the remedy that they need. So to me, it makes my work a little bit easier that way. And again, not just the remedy, but also the actual dilution as well. Because We have them all the way from D6 up to 10Ms, 50Ms, and MN as far as some of the remedies go.
Well, I think we're out of time for more questions on this call. I do want to remind everybody that we will be having another very exciting call using visuals on Monday, April 9th at 5 p.m. Pacific. You can check our website for more details, the call-in number. You'll also probably receive an email from us very soon about that. Morris, I want to thank you very much for a very interesting call. I think it's a fascinating subject, and I'm glad you took some time out to share it with us. I'm going to unmute the lines and let everybody thank you personally.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.